Leaving Edward Jones looks like one enormous decision from the inside. From the outside, it's four smaller ones done in a specific order. Today, I'll walk you through all four, including the one fact you can verify for yourself this week and the mistake that turns a clean resignation into litigation. Quick note before we get into it. Advisor Growth Lab is not a broker-dealer, and everything here is for educational purposes only. It's not individualized legal, tax, or investment advice. Every advisor's situation is different, so treat this as a map, not a set of directions. This one's for any advisor at Edward Jones who's been turning the question over, whether you're months out or just curious what a move involves. By the end, you'll know the four preparations, how the broker protocol question gets answered for your specific move, what your agreement actually controls, and where the line on client contact sits. Start with the list itself, because naming the four things drains most of the fear out of them. One, the protocol question, meaning whether the broker protocol covers your move. Two, your agreement, meaning what you actually signed. Three, the contact rules, meaning what you can and can't do with clients after you resign. And four, the destination. None of those is a mystery. Everyone has a knowable answer, and you want the answers before you give notice, because afterward you're improvising, and improvising is how advisors get hurt. And if it feels disloyal to even think about this, some context. Fidelity's advisor movement study found that more than half of advisors considered switching firms within a five-year window, and roughly one in four actually moved. Diamond Consultants' annual transition report counted more than 11,000 experienced advisors changing firms in 2025, up about 16% from the year before. Advisors leave large firms and rebuild their practices every year. Preparation is what separates the clean exits from the messy ones. So, the protocol question first, because it decides which kind of move you're planning. The broker protocol was created back in 2004 by a few of the big firms, Smith Barney, Merrill Lynch, and UBS, to protect clients' privacy and their freedom to choose their advisor when that advisor changes firms. Where it covers a move, the official protocol text spells out exactly five pieces of client information a departing advisor may take, and only for the clients they personally service: name, address, phone number, email address, and account title. That is the entire list. No account numbers, no statements, no copies of anything else. Take more than those five fields and you forfeit the protection, and that is the fastest way to convert a resignation into a courtroom. That's the mistake I mentioned up top. The mechanics are precise too. To be protected, the advisor resigns in writing to local branch management and leaves the firm a copy of the client information being taken. The copy you leave behind includes the account numbers. The copy you carry out does not. Details that small are exactly why departures get rehearsed with counsel instead of improvised on a Friday afternoon. Now, the part I want to be careful with. All of that protection is conditional on one thing. Both firms, the one you're leaving and the one you're joining, have to be signatories when you move, and membership is voluntary. Firms join and firms withdraw. More than 2,000 firms were on the administrator's October 2025 signatory list, and some of the biggest names in the industry have stepped in and stepped back out over the years, around 2017 and 2018 especially. The list keeps changing. So you never take this answer from a forum thread, a colleague's memory, or an article with a publication date on it, and that includes this show. You pull the current signatory list, check Edward Jones by name, check your destination firm by name, and then have a securities attorney tell you what the answer means for your move. That check takes an afternoon, and it is the first concrete step of the whole transition. The second preparation is your agreement, and it governs more than any industry framework does. Advisors go looking for the standard Edward Jones non-compete as if one universal answer exists. It doesn't work that way. Restrictive covenants vary by contract, by when you signed, and by state law. And two advisors at the same firm can be working under different paperwork. What decides your options is the document with your signature on it, the non-solicitation language, the confidentiality terms, how client information is defined, any notice period, and the treatment of any transition money still on the books. No episode can read that document for you, and this one won't pretend to. What a securities attorney does in that first review is translate the paper into behavior. What you may take, what you may say, whom you may contact, and when. Most advisors don't have that attorney on call, and that is exactly why finding one belongs at the front of this sequence instead of the end. Third, the contact rules, because this is where departing advisors get sloppy. In general terms, solicitation means initiating contact to invite business away from your former firm, while a client independently deciding to find you and move is a different act. Where the line falls in practice, an announcement, a LinkedIn update, a reply to a client's text message is exactly the kind of thing firms fight over, which is why generic rules of thumb are worth so little here. The answer that protects you is the one your attorney gives you about your own language in your own state. The discipline is boring on purpose. Know the boundary before you give notice. Decide exactly what you will and won't do in the first days. Keep records of what actually happened. That protects you, and it keeps your clients out of the middle. Fourth, the destination and the honest cost of getting there. The landing spot decides your day one support. Another broker-dealer usually runs a practice playbook with you. An independent platform trades some of that support for more ownership. Your own registered investment advisor, your own RIA, is the most work and the most control. Whichever it is, price the exit from your own paperwork before you choose it. Unvested deferred awards are typically forfeited at resignation, so your vesting schedule can matter more to the timing of a move than anything else on the calendar. And if you took transition money on the way in, remember what it usually is. FINRA itself has described recruitment incentives running as much as 2 to 3 times the prior year's commissions and fees, commonly structured as loans that forgive over years, and leaving before a note fully forgives generally means the balance comes due. An exit that pencils at year 6 may not pencil at year 2. One more point before I wrap up. Almost none of this turns on courage, and almost all of it turns on paperwork read correctly by the right specialist. A securities attorney who handles advisor transitions can tell you in about an hour which rules apply to your move and which don't. Most advisors only wish they'd made that call sooner. Get that person in your corner before you act, not after. If you want to know where your own transition stands, we built a short assessment for exactly that. 6 questions, about 2 minutes, and it routes you to a private conversation or the research that fits your situation. It's free on our website at advisorgrowthlab.com. Nobody gets notified. It's just a starting point. Check the list, then read your own paperwork. Clear eyes first, the move second. I'll see you tomorrow.